Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to talk home improvement with a couple of guests. We'll be visiting about terms like remodel, renovate, and restore with Chad Spate, one of us. He is the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
And Sam Breidenbach. Sam, president of TDS Custom Construction of Madison. Sam, good to see you.
Good to see you again, Larry. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you both back. We'll talk about expectations when starting a project, how it can affect the outcome and the cost. We'll take any other home improvement questions as well as we move along, but certainly what home projects are you thinking about? Questions, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. So we tend to think of terms like remodel or restoration or renovation. They're used pretty much interchangeably often, but they mean different things. Chad.
That's true. Yeah. So, you know, typically when we think of restoring a home, we're trying to take it back to how it was originally built. Remodel can mean almost anything.
Yeah.
Because you're often changing the home. And so you might be giving it a new look from what it had previously. Sometimes we're adding on to a home, and then other times we're just reimagining existing space within the footprint. And, you know, sometimes you're just keeping the house in good condition. So, you know, replacing a roof or replacing siding or something like that, which is just maintenance.
So from an environmental standpoint, is there, I mean, is it good to restore? Is it good to work in that way, Sam? Or?
Well, my definition of restoration is really bringing something back to an original point in time in which generally the point at which the house or the structure was built. So typically that word I use for, you know, historic restoration. And sometimes you can actually renovate an old historic building as well. So from an energy standpoint, you know, doing remodeling on an existing house or a historic structure is also appropriate, but it has to be done very carefully.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about my own home and how you might qualify or categorize it because it's a 1906 four square. And when we bought it, we kind of went down to the studs. We tried to keep the wood flooring and, you know, a lot of the molding and so forth. But it's, you know, kind of super insulated and it's an Energy Star home now. So even in the hottest weather, I haven't had to turn the air on or anything like that because it's cooler in the house than it is always outside. What would you call that? That would be a renovation?
I mean, yeah.
Sort of a combination between trying to save what we, as much as we could, but.
Right. You know, you mentioned earlier before the show started that you were restoring the condition of your siding.
Yeah.
And so in a way it's a combination, you're kind of restoring and remodeling and renovating. So you're remodeling it so that you're bringing it up to maybe 21st century sort of comfort standards.
Yeah.
But you're restoring the original siding that was on the house. So, you know.
And the flooring as much as we could inside the house.
Exactly.
And, yeah. So, how does it stack up cost-wise? I have to say I spent a lot of money on the project that I had.
Well, so one of the challenges whenever you are doing anything to a home, I mean, so typically let's say you're remodeling a kitchen or a bathroom.
Okay.
You already have a kitchen or a bathroom, but you want to improve perhaps the layout or maybe it's just the fixtures. Things will stay in the same place. But the point being that the house had a value that assumed that these amenities were there. And you're going to give it nicer amenities, but you're going to then have to pay to tear all that out and then replace it. So that sort of work doesn't, it never adds as much value to the home as it costs to do.
Yeah.
You know, because you still just have you have a kitchen, you just have a nicer kitchen or a nicer bathroom or nicer siding or a new roof, but you haven't added something to the home. So that is always a challenge. And of course, some of these things have to happen because surfaces and fixtures wear out and they need to eventually be replaced or restored in some way. So that's just upkeep.
Yeah.
But many times homeowners will really try to improve the home, and whether that's doing things to improve energy efficiency or the functionality and the amenities, it's hard to quantify the value of that to the occupant. But you definitely can quantify a reduced energy bill, for example.
Yeah, for sure.
So some of it does pay you back.
Yeah, I think the energy bill in this house of mine is a whole lot less than it would have been under if we hadn't done all the work, for sure. Well, what's your advice to people when you're talking to them about a renovation or, you know, restoring? Is it mostly, you know, kind of their own thoughts about how they want things done? Or I assume that's probably plays the biggest role, Sam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to bring up one really classic example that we find ourselves facing all the time is whether to replace or restore an old window in a house that was, you know, maybe from 1920s. You know, the restoration of an old window can actually, you know, depending upon what your motivations are. So there's, you know, there's the issues of lead. So the paint on the interior of the window and the exterior typically has lead. So the friction when you open that window, you know, can release lead into the atmosphere. So there's definitely that hazard. Replacing the window will give you some marginal energy efficiency gains, but they're pretty marginal versus the cost of actually replacing it. So you have to weigh out, you know, what your motivations are for doing something like that.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Well, we have a number of people who want to visit with you, so let's take some calls. There is one open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Carol in Minocqua will give you a chance. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Yes, we want to restore the cedar siding that we put on our home, probably 16, 17 years ago. Unfortunately, we never touched it. We had put an oil-based stain on it back then, and it has gotten very dark, almost black, over time. We've had contractors come, and some tell us it's a black mold mildew covering the house, making it sound real scary, and others say it's the natural darkening of the wood and darkening of the stain over time. I'd kind of like to tackle doing it myself, and I'm wondering, Is a chemical wash the best way to go, or could we possibly soda blast it off?
I wonder if it wouldn't be first a good idea to find out what that actually is, Chad, or, you know, if it's a mold or whatever.
Absolutely. I was thinking it might be good to remove a few pieces and have it analyzed to see. One question that I have, and I don't know if you know, Carol, but was the siding sealed in any way prior to installation, or was it raw when it was put up on the home?
It was raw when it was put up.
Okay.
Yeah, we put an oil-based stain on it.
And how long was it installed before you put the stain on?
The stain was put on prior to being put up.
Okay, so you had the wood, you stained it, and then put it on.
And then put it up, yes.
Okay.
But the backside of the siding wasn't back primed or anything or stained to seal it?
You know, I'm almost, that's a good question. I would have to think that both sides were stained, but I'm not 100% sure.
Hmm. Okay.
And is this discoloration and staining, is that happening on all sides of the house?
Yes, it is pretty uniform and solid. It's not, to me, a mold or mildew problem because it is so solid on all sides of the house.
Yeah.
You know, I have to wonder if perhaps the stain itself, you know, that it's something going on with the way it's aging. It's because it, you know, typically if we were seeing a mold or a mildew problem, it's likely to be consistent or more pronounced on certain sides of the home because of how environmental factors and sun exposure and things like that will vary.
Yeah.
And so if it's happening uniformly, you know, it was uniformly stained, but
yeah.
When the sidings was installed, do you know if there was any sort of building paper put on before the siding was installed? Felt paper, Tyvek.
There was Tyvek, yes. That name rings a bell. There was Tyvek put on, yes.
And how old is your home?
Boy, that's a good question, too. I'm wanting to say it's about 50 years old.
And that was put on, what did you just say, 14 years ago?
About 16, 17 years ago, about in 2002.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to remember when, and I think it predates this time, but maybe 20-some years ago, Tyvek was formulated in such a way that the tannins in cedar would eat through it. Now, that wouldn't necessarily explain why the siding is darkening,
yeah.
But it can definitely cause other problems, and those could then be leading to this condition. So one thing you might want to do, one of the advantages to removing some of the siding in a few areas where some pieces could be reasonably easily removed, you know, some shorter pieces of it, is that you'll see the condition of that underlayment, and then you'll be able to have it professionally inspected to see if there's some explanation.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. I'd do that, Carol. Good luck. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, one of our guests, Sam Breidenbach, the other. He is president of TDS Custom Construction. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home renovation and repair with our two guests, Chad Spade, he owns Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. Sam Breidenbach is president of TDS Custom Construction of Madison. It's always great to have these two guys stop by. And if you have a question, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Josh in Cornell, Wisconsin. We'll go to you next. Hi, Josh.
Yeah, say, I got a house that was built with rafters, a 12-12 pitch, and it's just a 2x8 rafter, and it's considered the hot roof. There's no venting that goes in and out. And all that is there for the insulation is the R21 or whatever it is that fills an 8-inch. Rafter, and I was thinking about spray foaming to seal it up a little better and get some more R's. And I was wondering, is it better to take all the insulation out in the sheetrock and then spray foam? Or can I just spray foam over the sheetrock after furring it out and leave what I have there and just kind of add to what's already there?
Chad, what do you think?
Well, that's a great question, Josh. So one thing that you might consider, how old is the roof on the structure?
It was built in 77, and it's got a plywood. It's rafters with plywood, and I've did some can lighting, and I did see in there, and it's all dried up and everything. I was worried about mold issues, but it's 77 built and seems to be looking good.
It has the original shingles on it?
No, the shingles were replaced 6-8 years ago.
Okay. So, you know, one possibility that is a good way to really improve the performance of a home is it when it's time to redo the roof, you can add a pretty thick, consistent foam layer, you know, sheet foam that would be installed. You'd remove the shingles, and then it's typically 4 inches of foam that are installed continuously on the entire roof deck. And then a furring strip is applied and a new layer of plywood or sheeting, and then your new shingles on top of that. And what that will do is that will give you an insulation layer that is continuous and not constantly interrupted by the rafters. But, you know, that may or may not be a good choice for you and your home. It is possible to remove the drywall, as you suggest, and remove all of that insulation, and then just apply a spray-in two-part foam. That would do something similar, but it's going to be more disruptive to the interior, and you'll still have the issue of thermal bridging at each one of those rafters, because that rafter, while it has some insulative qualities, it's going to transfer the heat from the inside to the outside of the structure. Does that make sense?
Right. So, and then what about the third option? So if I furred it out from the inside and left the sheetrock, would I jog the furring strip so that they did not align with the rafters? Would that, and then spray foam and then re-sheetrock again from the inside, would that be another good option, or is that kind of a half-measure way of...
Well, so that's probably the least desirable of those options, because there are some other issues that can arise. And, you know, so if unless you had a perfectly sealed layer, the problem is that any little bit of moist, warm air from the winter that gets up into that existing fiberglass bat rafter assembly, it's likely to hit a cold surface and condense, and then you're going to have potential problems there, and that will actually become colder when you add that insulative foam layer on the inside. So the potential for those problems to be much more aggravated than they would be now, you know, would
increases.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I would add is that if you, I agree with Chad that you really, if you're going to go the spray foam route from the interior, you should really remove the drywall and the existing insulation, and then make sure that the type of spray foam that you use is a closed cell product.
Closed cell. Okay. There you go, Josh. Thank you so much. Good luck with your project. Let's go to Brian in Richland Center next. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
I recently purchased a home. It was 2013. It was built, and I have a moisture problem, so I'm running two dehumidifiers. Is there a more efficient way of getting rid of the moisture?
Well, so... Have you put a hygrometer in the house to analyze the actual relative humidity?
No, I have not. I haven't done that. I gotta dump the dehumidifier once a day.
Okay. When the house, so do you have a forced air heating system?
Yes. Yeah.
And when the system was put in and the house was built, did you do any kind of an energy assessment of the house, like a home performance evaluation to determine how tight the house was?
No, I don't. Not aware of it. It was built before I bought it, so no, there was nothing done that I...
Yeah, that energy audit might be a good way to go.
I think that really would be a good way to go, because it really identifies how leaky or not the house is. And then they prescribe different solutions for making sure that airflow is, you have some way in which to exhaust some, you know, bring in some fresh air as well as exhaust stale air.
And now is this year is probably a good time to get it done, because I think there are some rebates issues in that the amounts of that are going to change, I think the next year.
And then the other thing that energy evaluation can do is analyze the equipment that you have, because if your AC system is oversized, then typically it's not going to dehumidify the house in the way in which it should. So if your system is too large, you may have to make some adjustments, either put in an inline dehumidification system or change out your AC system.
And to go, he would go online to get an audit, an energy audit. We go to
Focus on Energy.
Yeah, focusonenergy.com, and I think is what it is. And you can, for a few hundred bucks, you can have a really get somebody who's certified, which you'll find on that site. And I have had it done myself, and it's really eye opening. They have a lot of good information. They even give you information on if there's like five things that you should probably need to do. Here's the order. Here's what you should do first. Here's what you should do second.
Exactly.
It's really, really worth it,
yep.
Brian. So good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Linda in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I want to go back to the cedar siding problem that has turned black.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we have the same problem and we were going to just stain right over the top. And if we did stain, or if that is, acceptable, what kind of a stain, and can we use a colored stain? Of course, we do a little test spot first to see how the color would actually turn out. Any suggestions on that?
Well, it's a great question, and it's always a challenge particularly when you have a stained wood. That you're applying something new over top of that, there can be compatibility issues. We all know that preparation is the most important part of refinishing a wood structure, whether you're painting it or staining it. And so my concern would be that this blackened cedar, which we are scratching our heads a little bit on this, that if there is something going on inside of the wood that is then presenting through the old stain, that, the new material you put on there could either make that worse or not be compatible with the finish that's there. If there's mold present, I wouldn't want to be sanding that material without the appropriate equipment. For both the person doing the work and for the stripping or sanding of the material itself to capture those potential contaminants.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky problem.
Linda, we've got Beverly in Green Bay online, and she had a little comment about that as well. So let's just thanks for calling, Linda, to stay listening. Beverly, you got something for us?
Yes. Hi. I just recently had my house cleaned. It has white cedar siding, and it's about 12 years old. And my husband and I put on a colored stain on both sides of the wood when we hung it up. And over the last 12 years, of course, it has had some sun. It had some damage and some of that black mold on it. And we just had a process done to clean the siding, and it's called a soft wash, a premier soft wash. And they spray it on. It's supposedly environmentally friendly, and it kills all of that bacteria and mold that's on the siding. And then I just had it restained, and it's absolutely beautiful. In fact, it just was finished about a week ago, and I love it.
Well,
And Beverly, do you know if that product that you used was a Woolman's product?
You know, I'm not really sure. It's a company here on the west side of Green Bay that did it for me. And they're very reputable. They were very friendly. And the results were really, really nice. I was very pleased.
Awesome. Yeah, it was called a soft wash.
Yeah. I believe it was Premier Soft Wash is what it is. And I think that it's not just local. I think it is, you know, either regional or national. So that's my recommendation, is to check into that.
All right. Beverly, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's go from Cedar to the barn, I think. Todd in Cleveland, your turn. Or Clevenville,
hello.
Sorry.
Clevenville.
Clevenville, okay.
There you go. Hi. We've got an old barn that was put up on our property. It's never been used. It was an old barn from the next valley over. They dismantled it and put it up on about a 20 by 35 slab, something like that. Good-sized barn, two stories. Beautiful on the inside, no insulation, hand-hewn wood. The only trouble is that the slab sweats terribly. It didn't have gutters on. I put the gutters on and run the water away, thinking that might be it, but it still sweats, not as bad. Any suggestions?
Well, so this is an unconditioned space?
Yes. There's no insulation on the walls. You can see it's just old barn wood put up. Got two nice barn doors on one side and then a garage door on the other.
So
nice little bar inside. It's nice.
And does it sweat all the time, or is it primarily happening more recently?
It's not all the time, but it definitely in the spring, it sweats after the cold. It just gets cold. But then off and on in the summer, it just seems like on certain days, to the point where I can squeeze it off of it.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
So what is the topography around this? Is there a hill on one side? Or?
It's between Mount Horb and Cross Plains, along, right on the bike path, coming from Madison. So, yeah, there's a wetland behind us. We're up a little. We're up high from it, but we got wetland. The bike trail goes right next to it.
I guess, you know, my first thought would be that it might be possible if they're on one side of the property, if the grade comes down towards the barn.
Nah, it's not a big grade like that.
There isn't. Okay.
Now, across the road, out at the end, there's a hill, but that's at the end of a good long driveway. And
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe there's just, it's reaching the dew point consistently enough that's moisture out of the air that is then condensing on it.
Would it made a difference in how the floor was put in to begin with, if there was gravel, plastic, that sort of thing underneath? Would that have made a difference?
Well, if there's some sort of a vapor barrier underneath the slab, then that would help reduce, if not eliminate, any groundwater issues for where, you know, the slab is going to soak up moisture if it comes into contact with it. So, that would have been helpful had that been done. It probably wasn't done if it was just a slab to put this outbuilding that wasn't going to be conditioned, I'm guessing. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. I think that no matter what, I mean, when the outdoor temperature gets to be 90 degrees and the humidity levels are 70-80%, I mean, that ground is always going to be a little bit colder, so your dew point is going to be right on that slab, and I don't know that there's really any way to prevent that from happening. Keeping air moving through the space will certainly help.
Oh, a fan running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good idea, that's as a matter idea. Of fact. Probably the cheapest way there is to maybe help resolve the problem. So get yourself a couple of fans, Todd, and see what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Thank you for calling. Dan in Coloma, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. See, I have a two-family, side-by-side, and from one unit to the next, there's just too much noise transfer between. Is there a way that I can silence the wall or stop the transfer of sound from one side to the other?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for calling, Dan. So there are a variety of things that can be done. If you have enough space on your side of that common wall, it's great to be able to add some furring strips, and there's a channel that can be added that's really effective at creating an air pocket and also helping to isolate the structure from a new layer of drywall that would be installed. Doing something like that is going to take up about an inch of space if you have the room for it. The problem is that everything on that wall will have to be retrimmed, and like I say, you'll lose an inch of space. If you don't have that, you might consider looking into the possibility of adding material into the wall. It can be dense packed with cellulose, and that there probably should have been something done in that common wall, both for sound deadening and for fire proofing, to create a fire, 20-minute firewall. How old is the building? Do you know?
It's 70s, I believe.
70. Okay.
Yeah. So I would, have you ever opened up the wall anywhere just to see how it was constructed, to see if it's just a single cavity between the two sides?
Yes, it's single cavity with 2x4 construction.
Oh, my. Okay. Yeah, so that's about as minimal as it could be. And was there fiberglass inside? Or?
Not. If it is, it's sparse. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most effective way, I think, would be to install hat channel or resilient channel that Chad alluded to. What I would suggest is actually doing a layer of half-inch homosote, then the hat channel, then new drywall, and to really make it bomb-proof in a sense, and to really mitigate most of the sound transmission, do it on both sides of the wall. And then I think you'd have a very, very solid sound attenuated wall.
Yeah, that makes sense. Does that help, Dan?
Well, kind of, but what my experience here with this is that the kitchens are adjacent on the same wall. So when the cabinets are closed, I can't put a soft close hinge on them, and they're self-closing, so to speak, in a way. So when you hear the cupboard doors closing more than you hear voices or anything like that. Just when people are working in the kitchen on the other unit, and then it's vice versa as well.
Yeah.
But
that's a tougher issue there.
Yeah, that's challenging. I mean, until you remodel the kitchen, that's going to be your opportunity to add that layer. But you might be able to dense pack the wall, and that might provide a little relief.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't hurt. That's for sure.
Right.
There you go, Dan. Thank you so much for calling. Susan in Elgin, Illinois, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a question about insulation in the attic. We have two problems with our attic. One is the second floor of the house gets really warm, and at least one of the ceiling vents that's in the ceiling, coming down into the room gets water or condensation around it. And the other thing is that up in the attic, the vents do run from the basement up to the attic for the second floor and then, are vented down from the ceiling. And you can see them up there. I mean, they are wrapped. The venting is wrapped with an insulated wrap. And there is blown in fiberglass insulation. And it doesn't quite cover it. You can kind of see it in a few places, but mostly it's covered. I've had somebody up there before and they said, oh, it looks fine, that as far as that goes. And the other problem is our neighbors, we live in a townhome, and the neighbors on the one side use fragrant products and they get in. And we think they're coming in through, somehow into the attic and down through the walls, because you can usually smell it around the, baseboards and outlets, lights, that sort of thing. And so what we're wondering is, can you do a spray insulation along that wall in the attic? And is it possible to, or would it be worth it to do a spray insulation somehow on the flooring, but we don't know how to do that because we don't know, one, where to go and who to ask, and two, because of the venting just sort of laying over the floor, we didn't know how that would be done. Is that a possible thing?
So, really good question, Susan. So, help me understand, you're mentioning the floor. Are you saying the floor of the attic?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's just two buttons, you know, and to run over those, and then there's blown-in insulation.
Right. And is there any equipment in the attic, or is it all located in the basement?
It's all in the basement.
Okay. Yep. And have you had someone physically look at those duct runs within the attic to make sure that they're adequately sealed and thoroughly insulated?
Well, that's the thing. Last November, we had somebody come out and do an energy audit.
Yeah.
You know, with the blower door and all that. And so somebody was up in the attic and they took pictures. You know, I've seen the pictures. I wasn't up there with them. And they said everything looks okay up there, but I don't know how much of it, if they checked every duct or not. I mean, you can see that it has the sort of silvery insulated wrap around it, but I just don't know how well it's done. After we first moved in, it was 2016, and it was a new construction, and we had somebody come out and have a look at what, because there was so much moisture on the second floor, you know, just as far as humidity. And what they did is they said that the run of the supply and return coming from the basement to the attic on each of the first and second floors, they dug into the wall right there by the supplies. And it was like a lot of condensation around it. And so what they did is they just sealed up around the, you know, in the attic around where the supply and return come into the attic. With a spray sort of stuff, but, you know, it's a small job sort of thing. And they recommended putting, like, blown-in insulation into that second, you know, second floor and first floor cavity. We didn't do that because we didn't see why that would need to be done, because that's an interior wall. It's against the other side is our neighbors on the other side there.
Yeah.
We were surprised. I think we're probably still getting it, because you can see it in the basement, you know, where the return stuff comes out. You'll get, like, every once in a while on a really humid day, it drips, you know, into the basement.
Okay.
Yeah, my best advice, it sounds like you've got some pretty high moisture levels in your house, for one. If you're experiencing moisture even within the first and second floor, I think you've got some other issues that you have to address and really understand before you get into the attic. I think it's holistic for sure. But I think starting with a home performance evaluation to determine, you know, how your house performs right now, and to really have someone qualified look at the ductwork in the attic to make sure that it's really, really well sealed. And then manage the moisture levels in your house. That's really my best advice.
Yeah, and I would add to that, to clarify, because I know this is what Sam is going for, is that the duct system should be pressure tested. And that's not something that the home performance evaluation that you've already had done would have included. And that's really looking at how well sealed that system is, because within a home, your duct system is essentially a contained system. It's, you know, there might be a fresh air intake that is connected to it, but other than that, it's just recirculating and conditioning the air that's already in your home. And it's important that since it's migrating up into your attic and going to sealing supplies, it's very important that that be sealed, because otherwise it's going to be pulling that moist air or dry air, depending on the season, out of the attic. Once you've got a sealed functioning system, you know, that's one thing that will help potentially solve the problem. It could be that the return ducts on the second floor were not adequately sized, or that they became they've become obstructed, or something's going on with that. Because many times when we have a really hot and humid top floor, it's due to inadequate design of the system. So that might be part of the solution. And then lastly, I would just say, and this related to another call we had, you know, when you have high humidity in a home, sometimes you're just going to benefit from putting in a whole house dehumidification system that would either be integrated into that entire air handling system, or it might just function in the lowest level and still resolve the problem. There's some great systems. They're actually manufactured right here in Madison. Sierra or Savannah.
It'll
come. It'll come to us.
But there's a company that makes these, and they're great. I mean, they're very energy efficient, and they remove a tremendous amount of moisture. And these are systems that you run a hose right into your drain, so that you're not emptying a bucket, because they're pulling way too much moisture out of your home. But they're very effective and very inexpensive to operate for what they do. And often those can be installed into a home and deal with some of the moisture that is causing this problem.
So there you go, Susan. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison, Monona. Sam Breidenbach, president of TDS Custom Construction of Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement, renovation issues that you may have with your home with our two guests today, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breidenbach, president of TDS Custom Construction of Madison. Great to have both of them with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Questions for them, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And just to go back to Cedar Siding for a minute, James called. He's been a professional painter for 40 years. He says you have to take the black off cedar siding because it will eventually bleed through whatever you put on it. That was his advice. It goes along with kind of what you guys were saying as well. Tim in Beloit, your turn. Thank you for calling, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Larry. Last November, I had a new roof installed on my house, and as part of that, they changed the venting so that it was a ridgeline vent with soffit vents, and they got rid of the old-style vents that I had there previously. Prior to the new roof being installed, I would have an occasional attic smell in the second story. I was hoping that with the new ridgeline vents and the new soffit venting that the attic smell would never come back. However, after the new roof was installed in this summer when it got hot, I've had trouble with the attic smell. It seems to be even worse. Now, I've been able to get rid of some of the smell by closing off one of the cold air returns that's near the ceiling in the upstairs bedroom. But my question is, why does the attic smell come down into the second story? And would I want to add more venting in the roof? Go back to some of the old style vents, add some more venting in the roof?
So, Tim, thanks for the call. So what is the smell exactly? Is it like a musty smell?
It's the stuffy smell that you smell in a hot attic.
And so the cold air return that you mentioned, is that duct actually in the attic and then kind of snakes down in back into the ceiling?
No, this is an older home. The cold air return is in the wall of the upstairs bedroom, but it's not really an enclosed thing. It's between the 2x4s that make up the wall. It's not really a sheet metal type of cold air return.
And what type of insulation is in the attic?
There's blown air, blown in.
Blown it?
About 12 inches or 15 inches, maybe.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that if you haven't had an energy audit done, that you have that done, because it sounds to me like there's some air leakage happening. I mean, if there's an odor that if you go into the attic and you smell an odor and then you're getting that odor into your home, then there's some sort of interaction between the attic and probably your air handling system. And so if you'd want to first determine if that's the case, and then if it is, to have a professional insulation company come in and air seal the attic. It might involve removing that blown-in insulation and air sealing it and then reinstalling a blown-in insulation. The problem with blown-in insulation is that if you haven't air sealed living side of that space prior to putting it in, it just filters the air as it comes in and leaves your home. The blown-in insulation really doesn't do much if there isn't a sealed side up against it.
Yeah, and just to clarify what Chad mentioned, so it's really the air that's coming from the interior of the house that leaks into the attic through the stack effect. And all of that air is carrying, is warm, moist air that then, in the wintertime can condense within the insulation of the attic, thereby creating some unpleasant smells and environments that are not healthy.
So there you go. A couple of things to do there, Tim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Margo in La Crosse, we'll go to you next. Hi, Margo.
Hi. We are potentially having to replace our shingles on our roof, and we only have one layer. We built the house, and I want to know, is it better to leave the old shingles on or take them off when you re-roof a house?
I always like to remove old shingles. That's just my preference. It also offers the opportunity to do some insulation and or air sealing work in your attic. So it's a golden opportunity to do that.
The other thing, too, is that you can, if an ice and water shield was not properly installed on the perimeter of the home, you're not going to be able to address that if you just go over the original layer. And so that's that opportunity. And then if there's some damage somewhere, you'll discover it and be able to deal with that too.
Yeah.
Good point.
Good points. There you go, Margo. Thank you for calling. Len in Minocqua, your turn now. Hi, Len.
Hi. I have a question regarding our foundation for our home. We lost our home about a month and a half ago to a house fire, but the foundation is salvageable, and we're looking to rebuild on it. But it was an older home built in the 1970s, so it wasn't insulated in the basement. And been getting conflicting reports on whether I should foam seal that or just rigid foam it. And the recommendation that I'm leaning towards is the one that says we should power wash it, spray it with kills, and then spray foam to make sure that we seal out any of the smell from the fire so that when we get humid days, we're not weeping that smell back into the new house.
Are you? And is this recommendation to do this on the interior side of the foundation?
Correct. Because we're hoping to save the foundation and not have to excavate on the exterior at all.
I think that's a reasonable approach. Are you going to leave the lower level unfinished?
No, at some point we would finish it, but at this point it would be unfinished.
So the only thing that you really have to be concerned about is that whatever products are used to seal up and insulate, they have to be fire code compliant. You don't want, like, for example, if you were to apply a spray on foam, that would have to be covered with a fire rated material. There are some sheet foams that can be applied, like a Tuffar board with a black or metallic coating on it that is fire rated. And so that's an important detail. And as long as that final layer that is facing the living space or facing the basement is fire compliant, that should be fine. And if you do use a sheet material, you just need to make sure that it's sealed. And Thermax is the brand that we often use.
All right. There you go, Len. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're taking a look at home improvement and renovation today with our two guests, Chad Spate. He owns Chad's Design Build, and Sam Breidenbach, president of TDS Custom Construction. As for some reason, I want to say construction first. And so it's TDS Custom Construction of Madison. Great to have them with us. They'll be right along here until 12:30 today. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Chad and Sam. You stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking home renovation and repair today with our two guests, Chad Spate, who owns Chad's Design Build, and Sam Breidenbach, president of TDS Custom Construction of Madison. Great to have them along. Certainly, if you have a question, we have an open line at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll go right back to the phones. And Jenny and Madison, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
So I live on the second floor of a condo unit, two floors above me, have a gas fireplace in the living room, and it vents across the ceiling of the living room through a bedroom and then out to an outside wall. And in the wintertime, particularly when we get that really cold weather, if I run the fireplace in the living room, it causes a lot of condensation in the bedroom, and I get water on the wall. There's usually a little bit of ice on that outside vent. I had somebody come in once, and they kind of cut a hole in the wall and put some more insulation in there, but it's never really resolved the issue. And short of not running my fireplace on cold days, I'm wondering if there's something else I could consider doing it to resolve that water in the second bedroom walls.
You'd have thought that the insulation would have done it, but...
Well, so this is a great question, and I'm not sure we're going to know exactly what's happening, but I would suspect that the ductwork is not sealed well, because combustion does create a fair amount of moisture, and so I'm guessing that things are not venting properly, and then that air is, or that moisture is escaping, and then you're seeing these problems.
Also, I really worry about the length of that pipe from the fireplace to the exit as it exits the house. I would really start with the manufacturer's specifications on that gas fireplace and really find out what the recommended venting requirements are.
I was trying to think about a home that I used to own where we had a kind of a long run, and I think there was actually some sort of exhaust fan that had to be added somehow to the piping so that there was sufficient pressure there to move that out.
Yeah, each manufacturer has a specific requirement for venting, and each elbow and each length of pipe really factors into the efficiency and of the unit and its efficiency as well as safety.
Yeah. Right, and then that moist air, you know, not only does it have the water vapor in it, but it can have some carbon monoxide in it. And so if the vapor's coming in, the carbon monoxide could be coming in. And so it's a health concern on a number of levels.
So, Jenny, you should be looking at the name of the fireplace itself, who manufactured it, and then getting online or on the phone to the manufacturers and looking at their specifications.
And then finding a qualified technician to really look at it for you and assess it.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. We have Chris emailed that he's putting a new roof on a house in Bayfield County. His roofer provided a quote and said he could do a metal roof for only about $1,000 more. He said he was at Menards and found one product there when he was doing his own roof, so he opted for the metal. Have the costs of metal come down? Will a lower-cost metal roof give a long life? What should he be watching out for? Chad, I know you've put on some, I think you've put some metal roofs on, haven't you?
Well, I mean, we've had them done. I mean, it's really like anything else. You get what you pay for, and I would always be wary of a low-cost metal roof because there are many ways you can compromise the metal. I mean, thickness is one. The finish, there are a couple of buildings that always come to mind in Madison here over the years that I remember they had blue metal roofs that were delaminating some of the old Anchor Bank buildings or something. You know, it's like you think, wow, they, you know, that was an expensive replacement roof. So, you know, the whole point of putting on a metal roof is that typically you're putting on a 100-year roof, that a roof that might need to be repainted or resealed, but it's not necessarily going to be torn off and replaced. But if it's not appropriate to be a roof, then it's not going to last that long.
Yeah.
So those would be my concerns.
Okay. Neil in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've got a house. I've got a siding question. I've got a home with vinyl siding, but the corner trim is wood. It needs to be repainted every 4, 5, 6 years. I'm looking at other options for that. I know there are products that can be painted on that supposedly last longer. I'm wondering if I could replace that wood with PVC. And so I'm looking for a recommendation. It's a two-story house with a chimney, which raises up 3 stories, and I can't get up there to that repainting all the time.
Are you intending to keep the vinyl siding for the life of the house?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a couple of options. You could replace the wood with a PVC product, which can be painted. You could also, if the wood is in good shape and it's not rotted, you could actually cover it with a thin aluminum, which would then be maintenance-free. There's a variety of colors that you can choose. Or you could do a fiber cement trim, but that will require painting maybe 15, 20 years down the line.
So those are your options. Neil, you got a few good options there. I had the second option that you mentioned, Sam, and it's worked really, really well. Thank you for calling. Bill in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. I've got a house with a connecting garage, and there's a blacktop driveway that overlaps with part of the house, about 5-6 feet. The grading of the driveway is good, but not great. And when there's heavy rain, it just can't dissipate fast enough, and we get some overflow into gravel that's up against the house. The soffits overhang, you know, the edge of the blacktop pretty far, and you know, and it's really just only during really heavy rain. So what I'm curious about is, do you know of any products that might adhere to?
Adhere to? Oh, I think we lost Bill.
Oh, sorry. Oh no. Do you know of any products that might adhere to like older blacktop that I could build a lip with, or you know, just to give it time to dissipate, or anything else that might work to, you know, as just a temporary barrier?
Well, Bill, thanks for the call. That it's definitely a challenging situation because I'm sure that if you were to try to install some sort of a landscape edge, the blacktop itself is not going to have a uniform edge as you dig down next to it. And so it would be difficult to install something like that. I don't know of anything that would effectively adhere to that blacktop and seal that edge.
Could you build up? I guess the only other option maybe would be building up the with dirt or something along the side of the house so that it kind of runs toward the blacktop.
You could perhaps try to do like a clay cap that would maybe give you a little, and then you could put the
tough one there, Bill. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Everett in Woodman. I'm sorry. It's your turn. Hi, Everett.
Hello. Hi there. Thank you for having me on. There was a young man that called about having a smell up in his attic, of this old house that he lived in. Well, in my time, I've remodeled several old two-story houses and so forth like that, and I also was a teacher. And first of all, that in these old houses, sometimes the vents for the bathroom vents and, that were there only ended up into the attic, particularly if the attic didn't have a place, was not designed for having storage in it. Now, I also saw this down at a school where I was, where they had an inside gymnasium, and they made classrooms, two classrooms down, classrooms up, and they had to redo that all over again. And the guy that did it vented it into the attic, and he never. Some days when the wind was in the right direction, man, the smell was getting pretty good. I used to complain about it. So one day, the assistant superintendent went over on a weekend, and he found the same smell, because he wasn't in the room all the time. And they went up there and investigated, and all they did was shove the piping up through the roof, and that solved the problem. And it might be that this young man might have a similar situation where either the joints are not from being old or not tight, or it could be that it never did get out into the open, like through the roof.
Well, that's a possibility, Chad.
It is. I mean, it's certainly something to consider. And sometimes we do find that a plumbing system is not properly vented, and that it can definitely be a source of some pretty foul odors in a home. And so that may, in fact, end up being the explanation for this problem. But it's always something to consider.
Thanks, Everett. Appreciate the call. Trish and Madison, your turn. Hi, Trish.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a 100-year-old home, and just this last month I had new ductwork put in. It's a one-story home. I had to put in new ductwork because we found a ton of mold in my ducts, and I wasn't feeling well due to it. So the question I have is, so the supply ducts were in the center of the home, being such an old home. So the folks that did the ductwork for me, they put new supply ducts on the outer walls, and those inner supply ducts became cold air return.
Okay.
Okay. So, I have a question about that, but my bathroom, that they kept that as was. And so, these are those old ducts that are really big grates on the wall. And so they put in their new ductwork, and what I commented to them was that I can see the basement. There's like an inch gap between the size that the original boot was and the boot that they've put in, and I was concerned that I'm going to be getting, musty odors from the basement coming up, and I also wondered about the efficiency. So is that normal to see the basement through your ductwork?
Thanks for the question, Trish. No, it really doesn't sound like it was installed properly. Are you looking at, so when you look through the grate, is it the cold air return or the supply?
Okay, in this one, it's a supply.
Okay. So, I mean, if the system is properly sealed, so you could actually see between the outside of the pipe and the framing, which might give you a view to the basement, you know. So that actually wouldn't be bad as long as the, you know, as long as the supply register was adequately secured to the duct itself. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, it does make sense. And I actually realized I have not yet put the register back on because I needed to paint it and sand it because it was kind of rusty. So I realized as I was looking at it the other day and again wondering, should I really be able to see the basement, that they're going to have to rebuild this because that register has one of those metal flaps, you know, that... So the register they built my... I mean, sorry, the boot that they built, my register will not work on it.
Okay. Yeah, as long as the duct actually meets the supply register, so the finished grate, then it should be okay.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Trish. Matthew in Warren, Illinois, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I installed vinyl replacement windows in my very old farmhouse and centered them in the opening and used shims and everything and then used expandable foam around them to seal it. And in some of them, the window sills underneath are rotting out. The frames themselves have built-in weep holes that are above that point, but it's like moisture somehow getting under the window and then getting trapped between the bottom of the vinyl window and the windowsill and causing them to rot out. And it's not all the windows, it's some of them. I'm not sure what to do. And if I drill any weep holes, how do I prevent insects from then using those as openings to just crawl into the house?
So, Matthew, thanks for the call. Did you, you put in vinyl inserts, correct?
Yes, yes.
So that insert was sitting right on the old window sill.
It was shimmed up a little bit in some cases. There mm-hmm. was a, you know, there's that sliding plastic lip at the front end that lets you adjust for.
Right, right.
And so I floated it up a little bit, and then I put a I just filled the opening with some of the door window foam to seal it once I had the window centered and secured into the opening.
Okay. Well, so the and are there weep holes right at the bottom of that lip?
There's weep holes built into the hollow plastic frame of the window itself, but this is...
Those are higher up, correct?
Those are higher up. I don't think there's right. any weep holes built in that little plastic flap that you're talking about, and I'd almost have to drill either into the flap or drill a couple of small holes into the windowsill to provide drainage. And then I was thinking, well, would that actually work, and what would I want to fill that in with?
Right. It can be a difficult thing to retrofit, you know, if... Often when we put in an insert window, it's best practice to do something to add a layer of waterproofing and protection on that old sill so that any water that does get into that will not you know, cause these sorts of problems, but that it can also get out. And so if it were possible to... slide a piece of metal cladding under that unit and to help protect the old sill, that
probably the way.
Might be a solution, but you know, otherwise you may have to replace some of these, and when you replace them, you're going to want to make sure that any water that gets in will have a way to get out.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. And Judd in Iola, hi.
Hello?
Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Jude.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Thanks for taking my call. My question today is, we live in a old farmhouse that's 100 years old, and one of the outer buildings that's still there is the old milk house. And it's weathered gray like the barn's weather, so it's probably made out of the same type of wood, and we want to stain it. So how would you advise us to go about doing that?
Okay, so we've got an old building. It's weathered. No paint on it now?
Nope.
Jude? Okay.
No, absolutely not. Just it all grayed in time because it's about 105 years old.
Okay.
So I think, thanks for the call, Jude. What I would recommend is first and foremost, make sure that the siding is clean. And then you can use a preservative. Are you looking at to make it a dark color stain?
I was going to go with like a plum color, not dark, dark plum, like a medium plum, but it doesn't have to be like Better Homes and Gardens. I just want to give it some character because we use it to store all of our garden things, and we just love it, and we just
want to protect it, sure.
So yeah. when wood weathers for many, many years in the sun, what you know, the sun will actually degrade the integrity of the cellular structure of the wood. So the lignin in the wood actually gets removed, or breaks down. And so you have to be, you know, you can use an oil-based stain. You know, it may weather okay after that, but I would really recommend talking to a painting contractor who is highly recommended in your area to give you some professional advice.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Jude. Thank you so much for calling. And Chad and Sam, thank you both so much for taking time to be with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Chad's back on in September. Yeah. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Sam Breidenbach of TDS Custom Construction of Madison, our guests today, and you can find them online. Go to TDS Custom Construction or Chad's Design Build and take a look. And I should mention, Chad is, full disclosure, they are one of our many business sponsors. And I want to thank you for listening. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. The Vicars of Vegetables come back to be with us. Stay with us. Lots in store.